people.
This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Bush administration is taking a fresh look at its plans to turn over power in Iraq by June 30th. While that remains the deadline, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said Tuesday it's too early to tell whether it will have to be changed. The review underway is in response to objections to parts of the current plan by a leader of Iraq's majority Shiite Muslims. The decision to turn over control to Iraqis by June 30th remains a constant goal, administration officials said. It was not clear how the goal could be sustained, however, if a compromise cannot be reached with Shiite leaders. George W. Bush ordered the Pentagon to explore the possibility of a ground invasion of Iraq well before the United States was attacked on September 11, 2001, confirming the account former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill gives in his new book, according to ABC News. The official, who asked not to be identified, was present in the same National Security Council meetings as O'Neill immediately after Bush's inauguration in January and February of 2001. The president told his Pentagon officials to explore the military options, including use of ground forces, the official told ABC. That went beyond the Clinton administration's half-hearted attempts to overthrow Hussein without force. A top human rights group Tuesday accused the U.S. military of committing war crimes by demolishing homes of suspected insurgents and arresting the relatives of Iraqi fugitives. The military denied the charges by Human Rights Watch, saying it only destroyed homes that were being used to store weapons or as fighting positions, adding that all Iraqis detained were suspected of taking part in attacks on coalition forces. The New York-based human rights group said American soldiers demolished at least four Iraqi homes for no apparent military reason, other than to punish the families of anti-U.S. guerrilla suspects. More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
A researcher from the University of Wisconsin at Madison has figured out a better way to slice cheese. Just use a laser. Zhaochun Li, a mechanical engineering professor and laser expert, has adapted the same kind of laser used for eye surgery to slice Wisconsin's most famed food product. That laser, known as a cold laser, cuts by blasting apart the molecular bonds that hold materials together. At any other university, people would have just laughed. But this is Wisconsin, it's cheese, and it's no laughing matter, Lee said. Insert your own punchline here. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Not only is pollution nasty and deadly, but it's also a spoiled brat kind of substance that just won't stay put. You dump it over here and, whoops, it pops up over there or way out that way, or maybe even in that bag of organic baby lettuces you just bought. Indeed, organic baby lettuce is one of the surprising places that the Environmental Working Group recently found perchlorate. Having run scientific tests on 22 types of lettuce being sold in California supermarkets. Perchlorate is not something you want to find in your salad or on your BLT. It's a rocket fuel ingredient. It's known to cause brain damage and other health problems, especially in children, even when exposed only to trace amounts. The tests found way more than traces, however. One-fifth of the lettuces tested contained at least five times the amount of perchlorate that's considered safe. How did perchlorate end up in our lettuce? It came from a former rocket fuel factory located down at the tip of Nevada. The toxic chemical leached from the factory into the nearby Colorado River, which then carried it miles away through farmlands in Arizona and California, where 70% of our country's winter lettuce is grown. The farmers draw their irrigation water from the contaminated Colorado, and the lettuce sucks up both the water and perchlorate. Then the lettuce is harvested and shipped hundreds of miles to supermarkets where you buy it and take it into your home to serve to family, unaware that it comes pre-dressed with toxic rocket fuel. Pollution is like that. It just keeps going, ultimately into us. You'd think the powers that be would learn this lesson. Yet now these geniuses are saying it's perfectly safe to dump high-level nuclear waste in Nevada, claiming that it's too far away to hurt us. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about perchlorate and lettuce, call the working group, 202-667-6982.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Wednesday greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman. Boy, have you has this come together in anybody else's mind? Could it be that Halliburton, that the rumor is true, that Halliburton is contemplating the creation of a space exploration division? I can see it now. The first flag planted on Mars will be the Halliburton logo, right? It would explain George's sudden interest in Mars, although, frankly, I think he's just doing a John Kennedy. JFK, after the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion, within a few months, made his speech saying, we've got to put a man on the moon, you know, deflect attention. Politicians do that sort of thing. Anyhow, it's an interesting day here. President Bush, O'Neill. Right. Let's for just a second here go to Paul O'Neill, who said that George Bush had been planning the war on Iraq from the first day he was in office, even though he campaigned on being against interventionism and opposed to nation building. And the White House's response yesterday was, well, yeah, we inherited this thing from the Clinton administration that Saddam's regime was on that list of regimes that we'd like to see changed. And, you know, we've been thinking that we'd like to see the Chinese become democratic. The Burmese, I mean, look at some of the dictators. The Zimbabwe here, you've got Robert Mugabe, who has killed between 2 and 5 million of his own people in the last 8 years. Daniel Arap Moi, Kenya's changed. Anyhow, you've got dictators all over the world. I mean, even Egypt, you know, under Mubarak, is certainly not a democratic state. There is this arc of nations that are suffering under despotism that starts just north of South Africa, sweeps across the African continent, across North Africa, across the Middle East, and across Asia into Southern Asia, through China and all the way into Cambodia and Vietnam, and non-democratic nations where there is no democracy. And all of them are on the list of nations that we think, hey, we should change those regimes. So the right wing spin has been, yeah, we inherited the idea of changing regime from the Clinton administration. But here on ABC News, John Cochran just broke this story. President Bush ordered the Pentagon to explore the possibility of a ground invasion of Iraq well before the United States was attacked on September 11th, 2001. Now, see, a ground invasion is a whole different thing from regime change. And this is about putting in harm's way our young men and women. And you don't shed American blood unless the stakes are really high. I mean, that's been the bottom line since 1776. You just don't do it. Even with the Gulf War in 1991, where we were trying to protect our oil supplies in Kuwait, we organized it in such a fashion that we were a minority of the fighting forces, and that most of what we did was from the air. So, anyhow, the official who asked not to be identified was present in the same National Security Council meetings as O'Neill immediately after Bush's inauguration in January and February of 2001. The president told his Pentagon officials to explore the military options, including the use of ground forces, quote, end quote. The official told ABC News, quote, that went beyond the Clinton administration's half-hearted attempts to overthrow Hussein without force, end quote. Presumably a Republican there. Yes, Clinton was half-hearted. The United States government has been half-hearted about declaring war on anybody when they don't represent a threat to us for 227 years, by the definitions of these guys. By the way, just for those of you who are listening to stations that carry the third hour of this program, which is the majority but not all of our stations, on the third hour today we are going to simulcast with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC's Calgary station, Calgary and Edmonton, Alberta, and it's going to be a program where we're going to talk about mad cow disease. We've got some fascinating information here. I want to hear the Canadian side of this, what they're up to. They're going to have callers calling in. We're going to have callers calling in, and it's going to be interesting. Assuming that we can work out all the technical stuff, but Bill, our engineer in Detroit, assures me that they've got everything worked out. So this is something, to the best of my knowledge, that's not been done before, and should be very interesting. Here, this is of particular interest. George Bush, this from the New York Times today, is thinking about promoting marriage. Now, on its surface, this sounds like a marvelous idea. I'm all in favor of marriage. I've been married for, 31 years, Louise and I have been married. And you know, one of our kids is married, and I wish her well and hope it lasts forever. And you know, my parents are still married. I think marriage is a marvelous institution. And the people that I know who have experienced divorce or multiple divorces, it's very clear to me that it's a very painful experience. And the studies about kids being raised in a family with two parents, you know, that it's a better thing for them, they're pretty irrefutable. So on the surface, it seems like a great thing. But there's two little gotchas here, given that this is coming out of the Bush administration. The first is that they're going to use this as a pretext to promote a constitutional amendment barring gays from getting married. And which is, you know, it's one of those things that is like the flag burning amendment. A constitutional amendment, in order to get passed, not only has to pass the House and Senate, and I believe it has to pass by a two-thirds majority rather than a half majority, but then it has to be ratified by either two-thirds or three-quarters of the states. I think it's two-thirds of the states, and individually, one at a time. I mean, all of these states let it. It is really hard. There's been over 17,000 amendments proposed to the Constitution since it was first written, and only 20-some-odd have actually been ratified. Let's see if I got the number here. The last one was in 1971. Actually, there's been one since then. 27 amendments, and that's for congressional salaries. And then, of course, there was the 28th Amendment, I think. Yeah, the 28th Amendment was that the president can only serve two terms, which is not in my little book on the U.S. Constitution here. But in any case, so this is grandstanding. It's just political grandstanding. It's like saying to people, oh, yes, we're all in favor of you. In fact, we're going to do something that is impossible, but don't notice the fact that it's not the practical solution. It's just, you know, it's all for show, but still notice it. I mean, that's really the bottom line of trying to get a constitutional amendment like that passed. It's just, you know, it's... First of all, about half of Americans, if you look at the polls, about half of Americans think gays should be allowed to marry, and about half of Americans think, no, it's a bad idea. So, I can't imagine two-thirds of the states ratifying this thing, and I think it would have a hard time getting through Congress right now. But Bush wants to play to his base. He's got the fiscal conservatives, the traditional conservatives, all freaked out about his deficit and his tax deferment, where he gave trillions of dollars to the wealthy here, and the middle class is going to have to pay for it over the next 30 years. And the wealthy will as well. And so he's got a lot of traditional conservatives concerned. In fact, we're going to, in a second hour of our program, we're going to be talking to one fellow who's the head of Republicans for the Environment. I'll bet you didn't know there was such a group, and his concerns about what's going on right now with this administration. But anyhow, this New York Times article that announced this, then they get to the second part, and they only just kind of dance around the edge of it. But this is, I think, the key to the whole thing. Of course, first of all, administration officials expressed confidence that his marriage promotion plan would please conservatives. Yes, of course. It also plays to Mr. Bush's desire. This from the New York Times, an article by Robert Pear and David D. Kirkpatrick. Bush plans $1.5 billion drive for promotion of marriage. It also plays for Mr. Bush's desire to be viewed as a, quote, compassionate conservative, end quote, an image he sought to cultivate in his 2000 campaign. This year, administration officials say, Mr. Bush will probably visit programs trying to raise marriage rates in poor neighborhoods. And get this, a White House aide said, the president loves to do that sort of thing in the inner city with black churches. He's very good at it. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something, but I haven't. You know, the last time that I know of the president working in an inner city community was back when he was busted for cocaine in the 1960s and had to do community service in Dallas. And, I mean, as far as I know, that's it. He's probably showed up in some... You know, it certainly wouldn't be fundraising things. It would be photo ops. But anyhow, some liberals, the New York Times notes, have also expressed interest in marriage education programs. They say a growing body of statistical evidence suggests that children fare best financially and emotionally in married two-parent families. So you've got both groups. But so what's the deal here? Why promote this thing? Well, number one, you cater to your base. But number two, you get to funnel money to those people that delivered you the last election, to the extent that George Bush won the election, which is a premise that I refute, but nonetheless, to the extent that he even got any votes. Here you've got the situation where Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell sent out hundreds, perhaps millions, hundreds of thousands, certainly millions of pieces of mail to voters. They put together these election guides that were passed out in churches before the 2002 and 2000 elections, telling people how to vote. They've got a huge constituency, and they're very politically active, and they want money. Another one that wants money is Reverend Moon. Reverend Moon, oddly enough, I hear this, just consider this. This is from the New York Press. An article by Michelangelo Signorelli. In the New York Press, he says, can you imagine the owners of the New York Times or the Los Angeles Times or Cleveland's Plain Dealer pining out loud for the mass extinction of an entire group of people? Let's say they envisioned the incineration of all gays, claiming it was God's plan and had their words posted on the web. Can you imagine that? If the Los Angeles, any of the, quote, liberal media were to say that, boy, Drudge would go nuts, wouldn't he? Wouldn't Matt Drudge be all over that? And, well, it turns out that and Andrew Sullivan, you know, the right-winger who writes for the Washington Times, well, the Washington Times is owned by Reverend Moon, and Reverend Moon has said this now. There will be a purge on God's order, and evil will be eliminated like shadows, the Unification Church leader Reverend Moon and primary funder of money-losing right-wing Washington Times said last week, gays will be eliminated. You get this? Gays will be eliminated, Reverend Moon says. Well, let's look at Reverend Moon and this administration right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, Truth in Broadcasting. Stay tuned.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night. I roller skated to your door at daylight. It almost seems like you're avoiding me.
back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today brought to you, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics. Yes, there's our wacky music in the background. 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS. And now imagine this. If the owner of the New York Times came out and said, just get these quotes, gays will be eliminated. The three Israels will unite. If not, then they will be burned. We do not know what kind of world God will bring, but this is what happens. It will be greater than the communist purge, but at God's orders. The country that represents Satan's harvest is America. And furthermore, if you stay away from having children, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. You are bound to go somewhere else. You can call it hell. All quotes from Reverend Moon, the most recent from yesterday. Yesterday. And yet if just because he owns the Washington Times, the right-wing paper, we're not going to see much of this, I suspect. Now, in April, there was a summit called on Faith-Based Initiatives for Family and Community Renewal. It was made to look like it was sponsored by the Republican Party. In fact, J.C. Watts, the black Republican, issued press releases noting that the GOP's faith-based summit would be viewed by satellite at events in over 45 cities. It was promoted at the grassroots level by the American Leadership Council, the ALC, which is a project of the American Family Coalition and the Washington Times Foundation, both front organizations for the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. You getting this? Moon did this tour of 50 states. He said people were subject to him preaching about being the rebirth of Jesus Christ, and that only people blessed by him can, only people blessed by Reverend Moon can enter heaven. He went on another tirade about the misuse of love organs and blamed women for most divorces. He said married couples go to hell if they don't have babies, and attacked gays and lesbians as less than animals. Now, his key operative was a guy named David Caprara, a Unification Church member. He's a Mooney and former assistant secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development under Jack Kemp. He's well-connected in Washington, D.C. He's a president of the American Family Coalition, which is a Moon front, and represents the Washington Times Foundation. Caucus chairman for the organization, Rick Santorum and Joseph Lieberman. Joe Lieberman recently resigned from the organization when he decided to run for president. Prominent figures that Moon has given cash to come give speeches: George H.W. Bush, Jack Kemp, Dana Marilyn Quayle, Jesse Helms, Orrin Hatch, Jeannie Kirkpatrick, William Bennett, Alexander Haig, Ralph Reed, Gary Bauer, Beverly LaHaye, Jerry Falwell. Many times, in fact, a Moon publishing outfit gave a $400,000 low-interest loan to Falwell in 1996 to keep Liberty University from going down. The Women's Federation for World Peace, another Mooney front group, gave $3.5 million to the Christian Heritage Foundation, with instructions to use it to buy some of the debt incurred by Liberty University. Jerry Falwell. The Washington Times Foundation held an event honoring Moon, where Falwell received the Distinguished Lifetime Achievement Award for Freedom, Faith, and Family. It's a hand in glove, the Moonies and the extreme right. And now George Bush is saying, let's give them $1.5 billion taxpayer dollars to promote marriage. Moon is out there pushing what he calls faith-based social programs, abstinence education, and marriage promotion. Why? Because it makes him eligible for federal funds. This is an amazing story, friends. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back. You're in the Truth Arena.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Wildfires in tropical forests can be dangerous to life on the bottom of the ocean. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In 1997, wildfires raged for months over much of Southeast Asia. Even after the fires went out, the destruction continued offshore. Coral reefs near Indonesia started to die off, and so did the organisms that live on them. Companies that rely on the reefs for tourism lost business, and people who depend on the reefs for food lost their source of fish. A group of scientists in Australia and Indonesia say the environmental losses at sea are directly connected to smoke from the fires. Nereli Abram is working on a PhD in earth sciences at the Australian National University in Canberra. She and her colleagues studied skeletal remains of the Indonesian coral to recreate what happened when the reefs died. Abram says the coral suffocated. She says smoke from the wildfires contained huge amounts of iron, and it fell out on the surface of the sea and settled onto the reefs. The iron fed blooms of algae, and when the algae died, the process of decomposition robbed the water of oxygen. Abram says coral reefs will be hard hit if tropical wildfires become more common.
There isn't really any reason why this thing wouldn't happen again, particularly because the predictions are that wildfires are going to continue to become larger and more common in the future.
Abram says global warming might contribute to more tropical wildfires and more problems for marine ecosystems.
Our study adds another a new threat to coral reefs and shows that ecosystems are quite intricately linked, and what happens in one ecosystem can have an important impact on other ecosystems. So we need to be looking at more integrated management solutions.
The research by Abram and her colleagues was published last year in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on!
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And I want to believe you when you tell me that it'll be okay. Yeah, I try to believe you, but I don't.
Oh, come on, it is going to be okay. We're going to put this country back together. It's going to work out. Reverend Moon, the Moon sponsor organization, is the Council for National Policy, founded in 1981 by Tim LaHaye. Now, you know, it's not on the New York Times bestseller list because they are not. because they are considered religious books, and the New York Times does not have a religious books bestseller list, or it's not, the New York Times bestseller list does not include the category of religious books. There are a few categories it doesn't include. It doesn't include what do they call them, Bodice Rippers, or however you pronounce it, the women's novels. There's a name for them that's escaping me. And several other categories, but Tim LaHaye and Jerry Johnson, I think it is, have written this Left Behind series that starts out with the rapture happening, you know, this pilot flying, and he's having an affair with the flight attendant, and blah-de-blah, and she comes in and she says that half the people on the airplane have vanished, but their clothes are sitting on their seats, and all around him airplanes are falling out of the sky because their pilots have vanished. And, you know, and then it goes on to this series of stories of novels that have to do with the end of the world. And they have sold millions of copies. I mean, this guy has sold probably more books than John Grisham. These are huge. Absolutely huge. Okay. Another Moon-sponsored organization is the Council of National Policy, founded in 1981 by Tim LaHaye. This was before he was a famous author. The aforementioned co-author of the Left Behind book series. Some of the political leaders involved with the Moon-sponsored CNP group include Senators Jesse Helms, Don Nichols, Trent Lott, Representatives Tom DeLay, Dan Burton, and Bob Dornan. Another past Moon organization was the Coalition for Religious Freedom, where, again, Tim LaHaye held a paid position as chairman. It was formed by LaHaye after Moon was arrested for tax evasion. Jerry Falwell, Jimmy Swaggart, James Robeson, James Kennedy, and Rex Humbard have all served as executive committee members. Other notables to serve in Moon's CRF include Hal Lindsey, the author of The Late Great Planet Earth, Paul Crouch, head of the Trinity Broadcasting Network, and Dr. G. James Kennedy and Don Whitman, to name a few. So, Reverend Moon is well-connected. And you'll recall George Bush Sr., all of these guys have praised the Washington Times. I mean, the Washington Times, even though it continues to lose money, it is the primary Harlequin romances. Thank you, Char. That's what they were. Even though it continues to raise money, it is the premier voice for the extremists on the right in Washington, D.C. And so now the owner of the Washington Times, Reverend Sun Myung Moon, has come out and said that all gays will be incinerated. Burned up is his actual phrase, and suggesting that that's a marvelous thing. Okay, so we get back to George Bush and his $1.5 billion plan to promote marriage. Well, groups like the Southern Baptist Convention and Focus on the Family are pushing more quietly for the same thing, according to this New York Times article. And then we find out that they're already funneling money to these groups. Without waiting for Congress to act, the administration has retained consultants to help state and local government agencies, community organizations, and religious groups. And I guarantee you, that's where most of it is going. Develop marriage promotion programs. As I said, I'm all in favor of marriage promotion. I'm not in favor, you know, James Madison, I'm not in favor of federal money going to churches. James Madison, when he was president, vetoed a bill that was presented to, that Congress had passed, that was going to authorize federal funds to go to churches to help the poor. He vetoed it, and he gave a long speech about how this is an intolerable and an inappropriate intrusion into religion by government and into government by religion. And that's largely been the policy of the United States right up until Ronald Reagan came in and started pandering to the religious right, to a small niche of truly of religious people. I'm not disparaging fundamentalists' religiosity. I don't mean to do that, but I am saying that this is a niche in America, and a relatively small one when you look at the entire population of the country, and yet they are gaining a disproportionate amount of the cash and power that comes from these kinds of programs. Under the proposal, the president's proposal, the New York Times says, federal money could be used for specific activities like advertising campaigns to publicize the value of marriage. I'm sure you've seen those ads over the years. I mean, they've been on for 20 years or more, promoting marriage from the Church of Latter-day Saints. the Mormons. They don't call themselves the Mormons in the ads. Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints. And the ad seems to be promoting some family value, but the ad really is promoting the Mormons. I mean, that's why they're running it, right? So people watch the ad and go, oh, hey, you know, that's a good idea. I think, you know, good families are a good thing. Oh, the Mormons are behind that? Well, cool. So your tax dollars and mine are going to pay for churches to run ads telling us that marriage is good and then tagging them with brought to you by Jerry Falwell's Baptist Church. Alan M. Hershey, a senior fellow, this is the New York Times again, at the Mathematica Policy Research in Princeton, New Jersey, said his company had already had a $19.8 million federal contract to measure the effectiveness of such programs for unwed parents. Already, Mr. Hershey said, he is providing technical assistance to marriage education projects in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Louisiana, New Mexico, and Texas. One other point here, Dr. Horn said that federal money for marriage promotion would only be available to heterosexual couples. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, if you have thoughts on this. Terry in California. Hey, Terry, where in California are you?
I'm in Petaluma, just about 35 miles north of San Francisco.
Oh, great. Beautiful, beautiful part of the state. What's up?
Well, Tom, I was listening to you talking about the Moonies and the Moon Organization, and I can't put my finger on exactly where I got this information, but I understand that there was somebody that did some research on some of these best-selling books that were put out by people that were bashing the liberal, like Ann Coulter's book, for example.
Right.
The liberals.
You're talking about the mass purchases.
Yeah.
And
that most of those were being made by either the Moon Group directly or by front groups that they used to buy up massive amounts of those books to get them up on the charts.
Yeah, I don't have the specifics on that, and I don't have the stats. But when you look at the New York Times bestseller list in the New York Times, there's a little dagger, you know, those little icons that they use to indicate a footnote kind of thing. And I believe the dagger is the one that they use that they put next to the number, so it'll say, you know, number 3, Ann Coulter, treason, you know, and there's this little dagger next to it. And what that means is that the only reason that that book is on the list is because the total number of books sold includes what are called bulk buys. And bulk buys is where, like, the Moon Organization goes into the publisher and usually through a distributor, so it'll get counted by the New York Times, and they'll buy 100,000 books or 300,000 books. And then they'll turn around and sell them slowly, you know, through their churches, through their outlets, or back to retail stores even, in competition with the distributors at a loss, but a small loss. So they end up, you know, and they may pay $15 or $20 a book, but they sell them for $13 or $14, and so they end up not losing a whole lot. But what they do is they shoot the book up to the top of the New York Times list. And
that just amazes me. And then they make everybody think that, oh, this is a bestseller, I better read it. And then they're just reading propaganda.
Well, it's an old trick, and it's been done for a long time, particularly by authors on the right. It's what's interesting, and one of the guys who actually started this thing was the guy started something similar to this, was the guy who wrote "Swim with the Sharks." I'm forgetting his name. This is maybe 30 years ago in the 1970s. And it'll come to me. And he had hired a phone bank for a week to call every bookstore in America and under a phony name order 3 copies of his book. And this was like the week before it was published. And so all these bookstores, they're all getting, you know, hey, I've just got 3 orders for this book. You know, we better stock 5 or 6 of them. And so all the bookstores ordered 5 or 6. You know, you got thousands of bookstores. Suddenly there's, you know, the book was the best. It hit the New York Times bestseller list before it had shipped the first book. And yet nobody had actually bought a book. And the book retailers sort of got wise to that. The New York Times got wise to it. You can't do that anymore. They've figured out ways around it. Most bookstores now ask you for a credit card. You got to pay for the book when you order it. But, you know, manipulating bestseller lists is an old thing. And now I noticed that the conservatives have been claiming that, I think it was one of Michael Moore's books, that there's been some bulk buys on it. I would be frankly surprised. I don't know of any, quote, liberal interest groups, end quote, that have the money to do that. But it's an interesting one.
Speaking of Michael Moore and books, did you know he's going to be on Charlie Rose tonight?
No, that's great. I'll have to look for that.
Thank you for your work.
He's a good guy.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Terry. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that also. It's always nice to hear from folks here. In fact, we've got a couple more. David in Santa Fe is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES, by the way, is our number. Hey, David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. I'm great.
Yeah, I just want to say, since you're talking about religion and politics,
I see the word right-wing Christian as an oxymoron. Because
why?
They're not, well, they don't believe in anything that Christ taught. He taught love, acceptance, tolerance. They're right-wing Old Testamenters or right-wing Pharisees or something.
Oh, I understand. Not,
see what I'm saying?
I would say that clearly they have not read Matthew, is it Matthew 24 or Matthew 25? You know, where Jesus goes through his whole thing about, they come to him and they say, how do we get into heaven? And he says, well, here's how you get to heaven. And he says, the last day, I'll be sitting there separating the sheep from the goats. And the goats are going to go to hell and the sheep are going to, they'll be, you know, the ones who fed me when I was hungry and who clothed me when I was naked and who visited me when I was in prison. And the disciples all say, but we didn't do that. You were never in prison. You were never hungry. You weren't naked. And Jesus says, as you do the least among you, you do to me. And that's the criteria to get into heaven. Now, these folks clearly, you know, at the risk of sounding like a preacher, you know, haven't bothered to read the New Testament.
No, that's what I say. So they're not Christian. They're Old Testamenters.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's why they always talk about the Ten Commandments instead of the Sermon on the Mount.
Right. Some people believe that Christ was the founder of communism because of his acceptance and tolerance. So how they can be right-wing Christian, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point, David. Thank you for the call. And by the way, there's other things I wanted to tell you about here. Did you know, George Bush is down in Mexico right now. I don't know if he's come back yet. He was yesterday. That the Carlyle Group has just opened an office in Mexico. Could there be a coincidence? Private equity from the Carlyle Group said on Monday that it will, private equity firm, the Carlyle Group said on Monday that it will set up an office in Mexico and has made a number of new hires to start its business there. Joining Carlyle as senior advisor with an emphasis on Mexico is Thomas F. McLarty III, president of Kissinger McLarty Associates. David M. Rubenstein, Carlyle co-founder and managing director, described Mexico as, quote, fertile terrain for private equity investing. Well, the folks in South America are not so happy about this. I'll tell you about that after this call. This is Jim from Santa Fe's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, I'd just like to give you a true story about these Christian creeps in Colorado City. When I was living in Denver, the focus on the family.
Yeah.
They always talk about how they focus on the family. Well, my wife was working with kids with severe disabilities that nobody wanted. Family had dumped. Well, I called down there one day and asked them about their adoption services. Well, what? Well, let me know. Well, they never called back for 2 weeks, so I called back. She says, well, you know, we've talked, and maybe somebody might be interested. So their interest is only skin deep, and like you said, it's all, from my perspective anyway, it's all monetary and spreading a bunch of bullshit propaganda.
Well, yeah, okay. Thanks, Jim. And enough of that. I'm willing to grant them credit. I mean, for a while in my youth, I was a member of a fundamentalist church in Michigan, and there are a lot of good people who of faith. I mean, people who are really getting something out of their religion, and who truly believe the list, as it were. And you know, I'm not ready to indict Christianity or Christians, but Reverend Moon, I am enthusiastic about indicting. This guy who claims that he's come to earth to fulfill and finish Jesus Christ's work, that the last days are here, and that he's going to be the guy who supervises it, that God's going to destroy all the gays with fire, all these things. I mean, this and working his way into the government and getting all of these conservatives sucking up to him. I think if most Christians, and Christians in the largest sense of the word, ranging from liberal Christians to conservative Christians, if most Christians realized the extent to which the loud Christian right, Jerry Falwell, and the most outspoken of our politicians, Trent Lott and the Bush family, were involved with Reverend Moon, they would be shocked. I think they'd just be absolutely shocked. So anyhow, I wanted to mention that and basically just kind of out them. Latin American leaders told President Bush on Tuesday that perverse economic policies imposed by Washington had failed their countries. This, according to an article by Reuters. Our Washington's, quote, perverse economic policies have mired them in debt and poverty. Bush tried to make a pitch at the Americas-wide summit, you know, this meeting down there, for more free market. And instead, this article by Reuters, he instead heard stinging criticism that rampant free market policies had done nothing to ease poverty and had forced countries like Argentina into deep crisis. Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva said the Washington Consensus was this kind of document that came out some time ago, recipe of unfettered capitalism in Latin America in the last decade had not delivered growth and kept millions of people hungry in shanty towns and far-flung villages. The 90s were a decade of despair, he said. It is a perverse model, Lula said, that wrongly separated the economic from the social, put stability against growth, and separated responsibility and justice. Economic stability turned its back on social justice. So this is the thing. Capitalism is a good thing, and it must operate within appropriate social constraints which are provided by government. This is just a very, very simple equation. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be.
And welcome back. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman, and Bob in Indiana is on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I love listening to your program, and one of the things that I think as Democrats we always forget to tell people is that we happen to be Christians, too, and the Republicans try to paint us as being atheists, all of us. It's just that we want a separation of government and church like it was intended by the Founding Fathers. But I think that if Governor Dean would come out and maybe mention that, or one of the Democratic...
Well, I think Dean started to. I mean, you know, it's like on this program, I'll say I'm proud to say that I'm a Christian, but I do not consider Jerry Falwell to be a good Christian. You know, and that's the thing in Christianity, you got all these different people who are looking at each other going, oh, and you know, and Howard Dean came out and said that he was willing to talk about God, in answer to a reporter's question. In fact, you know, the reporter said, when are you going to start talking about God? And he's like, well, I guess when we get down south, that'll be an issue, something to that effect. We'll talk about God, and you know, and are you a Christian? Yeah, I am, he says. And so now it was, you know, this was last week. It was in the media that he's got a strategy for the South to talk about religion. You know, it's come on. But you're right, Bob. Democrats need to remind. I mean, there are a lot of Democrats who are Christians or who are observant Jews or who believe in, you know, who have faith or who are Muslim or who are highly moral atheists. I mean, they're right across the spectrum. I think that morality is not simply held on the right.
Yeah, and I guess that it doesn't seem to fit in with religious principles that your whole 10 or 90% of it is money. I mean, it seems to me the Republicans are concerned about taxes and being conservative, whereas Democrats generally follow causes that help people and the societal safety net and things like that. And I've always thought that was kind of odd that they lean so far to the Republican way of thinking, whereas Democrats tend to be more towards that thinking.
Toward the true compassionate thinking. I agree, Bob. Thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks Reverend Moon and the Republican National Committee.
The most ads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Democratic presidential candidate Wesley Clark on Tuesday criticized the timing of an investigation of former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill and suggested President Bush was more concerned with political security than national security. Campaigning in New Hampshire 2 weeks before its primary election, Clark called for a full congressional investigation into why the United States went to war in Iraq. Clark contended that Bush was obsessed with Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and with establishing a national missile defense in the months leading up to the September 11th terror attacks and did not do enough to protect the nation against such an attack. A top human rights group Tuesday accused the U.S. military of committing war crimes by demolishing homes of suspected insurgents and arresting the relatives of Iraqi fugitives. The military denied the charges by Human Rights Watch, saying it only destroyed homes that were being used to store weapons or as fighting positions, adding that all Iraqis detained were suspected of taking part in attacks on coalition forces. The New York-based human rights group said American soldiers demolished at least four Iraqi homes for no apparent military reason other than to punish the families of anti-U.S. guerrilla suspects. The Bush administration is taking a fresh look at its plans to turn over power in Iraq by June 30th. While that remains the deadline, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said Tuesday it's too early to tell whether it will have to be changed. The review underway is in response to objections to parts of the current plan by a leader of Iraq's majority Shiite Muslims. The decision to turn over control to Iraqis by June 30th remains a constant goal, administration officials said. It was not clear how the goal could be sustained, however, if a compromise cannot be reached with Shiite leaders. More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
You really can buy anything on eBay. A merry-go-round that once entertained children at Dolly Parton's theme park before being used as a ferry terminal boredom killer is being sold on eBay. Minimum bid, $40,000. The 47-year-old carousel is being sold by the Delaware River and Bay Authority, operators of the Cape May Lewis Ferry. The authority used it for 5 years at its terminal in Lower Township to entertain families with young children who were waiting for their ferry departures. The carousel was dismantled after the 2001 season and is now stored in a warehouse at the Cape May County Airport. For IE America Radio Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Not only is pollution nasty and deadly, but it's also a spoiled brat kind of substance that just won't stay put. You dump it over here and, whoops, it pops up over there or way out that way, or maybe even in that bag of organic baby lettuces you just bought. Indeed, organic baby lettuce is one of the surprising places that the Environmental Working Group recently found perchlorate, having run scientific tests on 22 types of lettuce being sold in California supermarkets. Perchlorate is not something you want to find in your salad or on your BLT. It's a rocket fuel ingredient. It's known to cause brain damage and other health problems, especially in children, even when exposed only to trace amounts. The tests found way more than traces, however. One-fifth of the lettuces tested contained at least five times the amount of perchlorate that's considered safe. How did perchlorate end up in our lettuce? It came from a former rocket fuel factory located down at the tip of Nevada. The toxic chemical leached from the factory into the nearby Colorado River, which then carried it miles away through farmlands in Arizona and California, where 70% of our country's winter lettuce is grown. The farmers draw their irrigation water from the contaminated Colorado, and the lettuce sucks up both the water and perchlorate. Then the lettuce is harvested and shipped hundreds of miles to supermarkets where you buy it and take it into your home to serve to family, unaware that it comes pre-dressed with toxic rocket fuel. Pollution is like that. It just keeps going, ultimately into us. You'd think the powers that be would learn this lesson. Yet now these geniuses are saying it's perfectly safe to dump high-level nuclear waste in Nevada, claiming that it's too far away to hurt us. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about perchlorate and lettuce, call the working group, 202-667-6982.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Representative Richard Pombo, Republican of California, was tapped last year over more senior Republicans as the chairman of the House Resources Committee. Now, why? Because he was given the job by the Republicans, the Republican National Committee, or whoever was in charge there, Trent Lott or whatever, of rewriting the Endangered Species Act. And he tried to rewrite it. It never made it to the House floor. Subsequent attempts also failed. And so today, the Associated Press reports, the chairman of the House Committee in charge of environmental policy says he's finished trying to recast, as in destroy, the Endangered Species Act in one fell swoop. Representative Richard Pombo, our California, says he wants to take it on a bit by bit. Quote, I think it's just a lot easier and a lot more practical to break it down, he said. Pombo is entering his second year as chairman of the House Resources Committee. His new approach worries environmentalists who say the 30-year-old law never has been in greater jeopardy. Into this mix, we bring Jim DePesso. Jim DePesso is the policy director of Rep America, R-E-P, Republicans for Environmental Protection, the national grassroots organization of Republicans for Environmental Protection, and of the REP Environmental Educational Foundation, a sister organization which works to build a conservative constituency for environmental protection. Before joining REP's staff in 2001, he served on REP America's Board of Directors for 5 years, beginning in 1996. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's a pleasure being with you again, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. It's been, 5 or 6 months since you were on? It's
Something
been a
like
little
that.
While. Yeah, it's good to have you back. I'm amazed you're still hanging in there as a Republican, Jim. Tell me, why?
Well, why is because the last thing this country needs is to continue the situation we have now, where the environment is polarized as a partisan issue, where the environment has been shoved into an ideological box that will hamper our ability to find those solutions we need to find to fix our country's environmental problems. There's no reason why the issue has to be polarized along partisan lines. There's just no reason for it.
Except that the Republicans are doing it. I mean, they have sold out to big business to the point that every major initiative that's come out of this administration has been a sop to large campaign contributors, corporate campaign contributors, probably because 98 or 99% of candidates who win elections are the ones who spent the most money. And, you know, Republicans have figured out where the money is. And the environment doesn't give campaign contributions.
Well, that's the problem. You've put your thumb on the core problem we're facing in this country when it comes to setting public policy, is that the tidal wave of big special interest money that is splashed into our political system is corrupting our politics. And so the short-term agendas of those who can write large checks trumps the what's in the long-term best interest of the public.
So you're trying to, I have recommended to my listeners who will consider themselves Greens or progressives or a little farther to the left than Democrats, that if they really want to see their agendas enacted, that they should infiltrate the Democratic Party and take it over, the same way that the extreme right wing infiltrated the Republican Party, starting with Barry Goldwater and then Ronald Reagan and now this guy, and take it over from within. Is your strategy to infiltrate the Republican Party with the idea that the environment is good, even if it means Monsanto's not going to make as much money?
Well, what we're saying is that there are ways that environmental protection can bring economic prosperity. We're just, in many ways, many of our party leaders are just looking at the issue all wrong. So what we're trying to do is inject some of our DNA into the party's messaging and philosophy, and over time hope that a number of Republican leaders will see that the environment and the economy are two sides of the same coin.
1-800, by the way, is our talk number. Is our number 1-800-TALK? Yes, that's 1-800-825-5937. If you have questions for Jim DePesso, the policy director of Rep America, Republicans for Environmental Protection, Jim, what are you up against?
Well, we're up against what a number of good causes are up against: the influence of large special interests on politics, especially in Washington D.C. There's just no question about the fact that, again, as I said, those who write the big checks, their interests trump those of the public at large. So we're up against that. But another thing we're up against is there has come to the fore this very hard-edged ideological faction that believes that all public policy problems can be solved by the market. Now, markets do good things, but they are not infallible, omniscient, and omnipotent. And so there is a need for good public policy. There is a faction in D.C., and you see the stuff that comes out of these think tanks, like the American Enterprise Institute and so forth, that believes that the market knows all and will solve all problems.
Well, they virtually are suggesting that American democracy, the Democratic Republic, our government, should be replaced by corporations. And George Bush, I mean, he just said that he's going to try and lay off 800,000 government workers over the course of his 8-year career that he's expecting, and replace them with private contractors in order to, number one, diminish the size and power of the federal employees' unions, and number two, because he doesn't believe the government should be performing functions that have to do with the commons. We should hand the commons over to corporations.
And that's a big mistake. And one of the issues that we've taken a stand on is farming out some of the jobs that the National Park Service rangers do and taking care of our national parks and historical parks. That would just be a tremendous travesty, because a lot of these people who are underpaid and overworked are very much driven by a mission, which is to take good care of our national parks. And you are not going to get that sense of mission. You're not going to have that institutional knowledge. You're not going to have all of the cross-training that these people have benefited from by simply putting it out to the lowest bidder.
Yeah, this is the thing that the conservatives consistently miss in their arguments for corporations to do everything. Well, they're more efficient. Yeah, they may be more efficient. It's like healthcare is such a classic example. The health insurance companies, you know, Medicare can deliver healthcare. Broadly, they say 3%. I mean, there are some studies that go as low as 1% of cost of administration. But let's say it's 3%. The health insurance companies come along and say, we can deliver it for 2.7%. And that's probably true. I mean, they can outsource to India the people making the telephone, you know, answering the phone and all these kinds of things. However, the cost isn't going to be 2.7%. We know it's between 15 and 30%. Why? Because they've got to pay corporate profits, you know, dividends to their shareholders. They've got to pay multi-million dollar salaries to their CEOs. In civil service, you don't have multi-million dollar salaries. They've got, you know, gold-plated headquarters, I mean, gold-plated bathrooms and private jets and corporate fleets. And you don't have any of that in government. They've got multi-million dollar advertising campaigns. You don't have any of that in government. They've got market. I mean, yes, a private business can do some things more efficiently. And there are a lot of things that we don't want the government in the business of. I don't want the government in the business of selling fast food. I don't want the government in the business of running movie theaters. I don't want the government in the business of running radio and television stations. I don't think that it's appropriate for an entire industry. I mean, all in favor of public radio, but that's, you know, a little tiny slice there. But our police, our fire departments, our roads, the cleanliness of our water, whether our food has mad cow disease, these are things that if you just bid them out, the people doing them have as their primary mission, make money, save, you know, cut expenses. And on the other hand, when, as you said, if you the National Park Service, you can hire somebody who is just looking for a job and just, you know, wants the cash and is willing to work for $7 or $8 an hour or whatever. Or you can hire somebody into the civil service who's looking for a career in the environment and in the parks and who's really committed, who's never going to make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars like, you know, the higher ups in the corporation that might take over that service will, but they're really going to dance their hearts out for that issue. They really care about that. So you have an organization whose institutional mission, instead of being to make profit, is to preserve our parks or to preserve the safety of our food supply or to make sure that our drugs are safe. And I just don't understand why people in your party don't understand this, Jim. What happens when you talk to these guys?
Well, it depends. Sometimes there are people who do get it. There are other people who are really stuck on this ideological notion that, as you said, the private sector is always more efficient than the public sector. Well, let me give you an example. One of our members in New Mexico is a retired Park Service manager, and he actually studied this whole issue of outsourcing and privatization. And as a result of his study, he found that outsourcing would end up costing the taxpayers even more than simply letting the rangers continue to do the job because of there's some ancillary costs that the ideological argument doesn't take note of. So,
profit?
Nothing is as simple as the ideologues that make it out to be.
Yeah, it rarely is. It rarely is. So, Republicans who are listening, what message do you have for them?
For Republicans, we tell them that conservation and environmental protection is consistent with old traditional Republican values that in today's world we often have lost sight of. Things like fiscal responsibility, things like good stewardship, things like making sure that we're taking care of the interests of future generations. These are old traditional values that have been in many ways distorted and corrupted by this bizarre ideological dogma that is a weird combination of reactionary populism and crony capitalism.
Which has taken over your party.
Well, that's the problem we're up against, and that's why we're here.
Yeah, and what kind of successes are you having?
Well, we provide a lot of support for those Republicans in Congress who do get it. Many of them are in the Northeast who vote responsibly. They are very grateful that we're out there because it enables them to tell their colleagues in the caucus that I have Republican constituents that want this, so I cannot vote for a bad piece of legislation.
So
we provide political cover for our friends in Congress. And also, we get a message out there to our not-so-friendly members of Congress that there are Republicans who don't appreciate what they're doing. I got a call out of the blue yesterday from an elderly woman in Palm Beach, Florida, who said that she was just furious at the Republican Party. She said, I am very conservative. I'm as conservative as you can get, but I do not appreciate what they're doing on the environment. And, you know, a woman who called completely out of the blue to tell me that tells me that there are folks out there who are Republicans, have always been Republicans, but they also believe that conservation is conservative and is consistent with traditional Republican values.
So you're supporting, like, an Olympia Snow, the Republican from Maine?
Oh, yeah, Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, Congressman Sherwood Bollert in New York, who is really the go-to guy in the House for conservation-minded Republicans. They call him the Green Hornet. Congressman Jim Greenwood in Pennsylvania, and there are others as well. They're in a minority, but we want to make sure that they stay put in Congress so that they can continue to make their voices heard in caucus.
Yeah, but the Republican leadership is calling these guys rhinos, Republicans in name only. I mean, it's quite remarkable.
That's a six-stone name calling. You know, what does that mean?
We're talking to Jim DePasso of Republicans for Environmental Protection. We'll have a few more minutes with Jim. If you have a call, if you have a comment or a question, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
For
the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Zone with Tom Hartman. We're talking with Jim DePesso. Jim, am I pronouncing your last name right?
That's close enough. There's a DePesso, DePesso. I think the traditional Italian pronunciation is DePesso.
DePesso.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you use all of the above, or you have a particular...
Oh, whatever suits people, whatever makes it easy for them.
All righty. The Supreme Court today... Jim, I just want to get your comment on this.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, let me jump down to the next one. The Supreme Court today is looking at whether the federal government has the power to require local governments to weaken pollution laws. The Bush administration is trying to get California to reduce their emission standards, to weaken the emission standards for vehicles in the smog-choked Los Angeles area. The requirement mandates owners to buy low-polluting models when they retire older vehicles or expand. However, in an anti-states' rights move, the administration claims that the much weaker Clean Air Act takes precedent over the tougher state anti-smog rules. The LA Times writes that the White House efforts, quote, clothed in erudite language about state versus federal powers, are really outright concessions to car and engine makers and oil refiners, end quote. A defeat here would be a blow to states' rights, says the Center for American Progress, as well as to the environment. New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, and Connecticut also have adopted the stricter California requirements in an attempt to keep the air clean. What do you think about this?
Well, I think that this brings to mind a serious problem, is that often you hear rhetoric from many of our Republican leaders who call for states' rights and local control. But when that interferes with the agendas of big special interests, all of the philosophy about states' rights and local control goes out the window. So I am very much in California's camp. I hope Governor Schwarzenegger fights this, and he has already said he's going to fight the federal government's efforts to weaken or eliminate the carbon dioxide tailpipe standards that California passed, I believe, last year. So this is a fight that every state has a stake in, and we are very much in favor of states having the authority to protect their citizens by adopting environmental standards as strong as they believe is necessary to protect the public health.
Yeah, well done. Okay, Jim, website before we let you go here?
www.repamerica.org. You can also get there by going to www.rep.org, but that pathway is experiencing some technical difficulties right now. So go to repamerica.org, and you should be able to find all kinds of interesting information that we have up there about environmental issues.
Great. Jim DePesso of Republicans for Environmental Protection. Thanks for being with us today, Jim.
Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Talk to you later. The Supreme Court today has a chance, this is another Supreme Court case, to stop water pollution from destroying the Florida Everglades. Here's the situation. A water management company in southwest Broward County is dumping, here's a quote, from as much as 423,000 gallons a minute of polluted runoff from suburban lawns, farms, and industrial yards into the Everglades, end quote. The company doesn't dispute the water it's pumping is polluted, but it says it has no other place to put it. The pollution is changing the water chemistry, killing some native plants, and allowing other non-native plants to thrive. Perversely, this water management company says the expense incurred to stop destroying the area would take money away from the government's $8.4 billion effort to protect the environment. If you can follow the logic on that, a defeat for the Everglades would mean water management companies could move polluted water wherever they wanted with no thought of the repercussions to the environment. This is a case before the Supreme Court. Says David Reiner, president of the Friends of the Everglades, quote, "It is a get-out-of-jail-free card for water management agencies throughout the country," end quote. So it's going to be interesting to see how the court rules on these things that are being argued before today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get Union Maine clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Wildfires in tropical forests can be dangerous to life on the bottom of the ocean. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In 1997, wildfires raged for months over much of Southeast Asia. Even after the fires went out, the destruction continued offshore. Coral reefs near Indonesia started to die off, and so did the organisms that live on them. Companies that rely on the reefs for tourism lost business, and people who depend on the reefs for food lost their source of fish. A group of scientists in Australia and Indonesia say the environmental losses at sea are directly connected to smoke from the fires. Nereli Abram is working on a PhD in earth sciences at the Australian National University in Canberra. She and her colleagues studied skeletal remains of the Indonesian coral to recreate what happened when the reefs died. Abram says the coral suffocated. She says smoke from the wildfires contained huge amounts of iron, and it fell out on the surface of the sea and settled onto the reefs. The iron fed blooms of algae, and when the algae died, the process of decomposition robbed the water of oxygen. Abram says coral reefs will be hard hit if tropical wildfires become more common.
There isn't really any reason why this thing wouldn't happen again, particularly because the predictions are that wildfires are going to continue to become larger and more common in the future.
Abram says global warming might contribute to more tropical wildfires and more problems for marine ecosystems.
Our study adds another a new threat to coral reefs and shows that ecosystems are quite intricately linked, and what happens in one ecosystem can have an important impact on other ecosystems, so we need to be looking at more integrated management solutions.
The research by Abram and her colleagues was published last year in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. Franklin Delano Roosevelt provided our quote for the day. He said, "The liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to the point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself. That, in its essence, is fascism. Ownership of government by an individual, by a group, or by any controlling private power." End quote. Franklin D. Roosevelt. So, not far in the distant future, imagine this scenario. You call up to order a pizza, you know, ring, ring, ring.
Thank you for calling Pizza House. May I have your order?
Yeah, can I order,
can I have your multi-purpose card number first, sir?
Yeah, let's see, it's 612-049-8503.
Okay, you're Mr. Sheehan, and you're calling from 17 Meadow Drive. Your home number is 484-2366, your office number is 745-2304, and your mobile is 014-266-2566. Would you like to have the delivery made to 17 Meadow Drive?
How did you get all my phone numbers?
Well, for your convenience, sir, we're connected to the USA Patriot System and Global Insurance Database.
May I order your seafood pizza?
Well, that's not a good idea, sir.
Well, how come?
Well, according to your medical records, you have high blood pressure and even higher cholesterol levels, sir.
What? What do you recommend, then?
Well, try our low-fat soybean yogurt pizza. You'll like it.
How do you know for sure?
Well, the USA Patriot database says you borrowed a book entitled Popular Soybean Yogurt Dishes from the National Library just last week, sir.
Okay, I give up. Give me three family-size ones, then. How much will that cost?
Well, that should be enough for your family of 10, sir. The total is $49.99.
Can I pay by credit card?
I'm afraid you'll have to pay us cash, sir. Your credit card is over the limit, and you owe your bank $3,720.55 since October of last year. And that's not including the late payment charges on your housing loan, sir.
Well, I guess I have to run to the neighborhood ATM and withdraw some money before your guy arrives.
Well, you can't do that, sir. Based on our records, you've reached your daily limit on machine withdrawal today.
Never mind. Just send the pizza, and I'll have the cash ready. How long is it going to take, anyway?
About 45 minutes, sir. But if you can't wait, you can always come and collect it on your motorcycle.
What?
According to the details in our system, you own a Harley registration number, Whiting, E1223. Watch your language, sir. Remember on July 15th, 1987, you were convicted of using abusive language to a policeman. What? Is there anything else, sir?
Nothing. But by the way, are you giving me the three free bottles of Pepsi as advertised?
We normally would, sir, but based on your medical records, you're also diabetic.
Can you imagine? As the corporate databases begin merging, now that the Bush administration has suspended our privacy protections so extensively, this, of course, was done last year. That, by the way, was something off the web. It was forwarded to me by a friend of mine, Dave DeBronkart, and I'm unsure of its source. So if I'm stepping on somebody's copyright, I apologize. Let me know, and I will acknowledge it on the air. The right is it's funny how it's interesting, actually, how histrionic and what you can use to raise money with really is the bottom line. Let me share with you our conservative alert for the day. This from conservativealerts.com, you know, the home of conservative alerts. Last week we told you about the latest vicious campaign by the radical liberal organization MoveOn.org, where they pulled the now standard leftist ploy, calling President Bush another Hitler. This is typical for far-left types. We see it on signs in the, quote, peace, end quote, marches. We hear it from left-wing billionaires like George Soros. We see it in MTV videos, and now as part of a, quote, contest, end quote, MoveOn.org sponsored called Bush in 30 Seconds, where, quote, contestants, end quote, could create anti-Bush television ads to be played in their $7 million ad campaign. MoveOn.org posted ads on their website that compared President Bush to Adolf Hitler. As we told you, one of the ads that was submitted that MoveOn.org considered viable for airing, quote, morphed, end quote, President Bush into Adolf Hitler. Another ad features images of the German military and dictator with the words, "What were war crimes in 1945 is foreign policy in 2003. Showing Hitler with his hand raised and then a shot of Bush with his hand up.
taking the oath of office, no less. And now a third video comparing President Bush to Adolf Hitler has surfaced. A third video! The video even appears to be produced by one of the 15 finalists in the MoveOn.org ad contest. These people have no shame, says Conservative Alerts. And then, you know, kind of speaking of a tempest in a teapot, I mean, these ads were, there was 1,500 of ads that were, you know, submitted, and they said, you know, to their members, vote on the ads, and we're going to boil it down to the top 15, and then out of that we'll pick one. And they just did. And they're going to try and run it on the Super Bowl. And out of the 1,500 ads, there were these two ads that made the comparisons between the attack on the Reichstagsgebäude, the parliament building, when Marius van der Lubbe, the deranged Dutch communist, was at least blamed for it. There's a historical argument about whether he did it or whether the Nazis did it. But in any case, he was blamed for setting a fire at the Reichstag building, the German parliament building. And this, Adolf Hitler showed up. At the time, Hitler did not have power. His party had not won a majority or even a plurality. And he showed up in front of the Reichstag building as it was burning and called the radio stations all together and said, "This is a historic moment. This is a sign from God. We must commit ourselves to fighting this kind of terrorism." I'm paraphrasing, but you'll find all those words in his speech. The actual, if you go to tomhartmann.com and click on the articles on democracy and then scroll down to when democracy failed, the whole history of that thing is there. And that war on terrorism that Hitler said in the first iteration was caused by the communists. And then he, about a year later started saying, well, it wasn't even a year, it was a few months later, started saying, well, no, it really wasn't the communists, really it was the Jews who were behind the communists. And, you know, it's a Middle Eastern people, right, that he blamed this thing on. I mean, the parallels are really rather interesting. Not to say that I think George Bush is Hitler. I don't think he's anywhere near in the league with Hitler. But anyhow, these articles were just pointing out these comparisons, these ads. And move on to their credit, or not. I mean, some people are very upset with them for having pulled the ads. But they said, you guys can't even vote on these ads. We're not going to run them. You know, once somebody pointed out to them that they thought they were in poor taste. And they never ran. They were not in the finalists. You can't find them. So anyhow, Conservative Alerts, we've started to run our radio ads in the first primary states like Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, demanding that the Democrat candidates, you can always tell a Republican who has listened to Newt Gingrich, you know, where he said, we live in a republic, not a democracy, because republic sounds more like Republican, and we don't want to say democratic, because that sounds good. We learned in school that democratic was a good thing, so you say Democrat. You don't say the Democratic representative, the Democratic Senator Ted Kennedy. You would say the Democrat Senator. Anyway, that the Democrat candidates publicly repudiate, even though the party is called the Democratic Party, the Democrat candidates publicly repudiate any support from political hate groups like MoveOn.org. In fact, our ads have even begun to run nationwide on the Salem Radio Network. And you can listen here. And then they go on to say, but we don't have the deep pockets of George Soros as we purchase the space for these ads. But we need, so, you know, we've already raised $10,000. We're very thankful. Send us more money is the bottom line. Our conservative alert for the day. Yeah, those wacky cons. You know, the cost of fixing the backlog of maintenance and repair projects in America's national parks is now about the same as when George Bush took office. This is one of the things that he campaigned on, if you remember. He said that he was going to eliminate it within 5 years. There was, you know, he was criticizing Bill Clinton for not being an environmentalist because the National Park Service was billions of dollars. And, I mean, this is a legitimate gripe. It was, you know, somewhere between $4 and $6 billion. Oh, no, in 2000, it was $4.9 billion of repairs that needed to be done: bridges, sewer systems, deteriorating buildings, roads. Our parks are falling apart, and we had not been allocating resources for them during the Reagan administration, during the first Bush administration. They basically got, you know, starved of oxygen.
Clinton turned it up a little bit, but nowhere near enough to revive the infrastructure of our national park system. And George Bush had hacked him for that. Well, it turns out that the $4.9 billion that it would have taken to fix the parks in 2000 during the election has now become $6.8 billion. The administration has only spent actual money, $200 to $300 million to address the backlog, which is huge, substantial, and putting our parks at considerable risk. And when they start, you know, when things start falling apart, then they'll say, ah, this is great. This is a reason to bring in a private corporation to take this over. And then you will see, you know, somebody making a whole bunch of money and giving more of that money to Republican, well, I should say to conservative. There are Democrats who are taking this stuff as well, to conservative politicians. Another Bush Greenwatch. These are from the BushGreenwatch.org site, which is a great website. The Bush administration has decided to appeal a court ruling that last month threw out its policy on snowmobiles in Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks, which a federal judge rules was, quote, completely politically driven and not based on sound science. Sean Smith, the public lands director for the Blue Water Network, said this is another example of how the Bush administration is in bed with industry. Oh, it took this guy this long to figure that out. Last month, U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan ordered the National Park Service to restore the Clinton-era plan to ban snowmobiles in the two parks in favor of quieter, less intrusive snow coaches operated by the Park Service. See, snowmobile companies who are, you know, donors to the Republican candidates out in these states, who then, you know, are in the Congress, are saying, oh, they don't want people in the parks in the winter, you know. No, we don't want motorcycles and ATVs and snowmobiles because they release enormous amounts of pollution and loud noises, and they screw up the habitat for the wildlife. And if you want to go out and see what the wildlife are really like, you want to actually see nature, you've got to do it quietly. Sorry, it's just like, you know, there are like these kind of laws of nature. And this is one of them. How much more damage is the Bush administration going to do to our environment? The U.S. military, is the U.S. military running out of ammunition? Can you, I mean, here we have the War College publishing this report yesterday about how, or the day before yesterday, about how the war in Iraq was a diversion from the war on terrorism. The Bush administration loves to tie the two together. But did you see the thing where Saddam Hussein was, when he was arrested, one of the documents in his possession was a letter to his, you know, loyal followers or whatever, saying, do not allow other Arabs, a.k.a. Al-Qaeda, into Iraq. Don't let them get involved in this insurgency. I mean, you know, not only was there no connection between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, but these guys were enemies, absolute enemies. So anyhow, we got this war. We've you know, so many of our soldiers have died. So many are you know, every day. So many are being wounded. It was interesting. In the month from when Saddam Hussein was caught until now, more U.S. soldiers have died than in the previous month. And that statistic is widely reported. I don't have the exact numbers right in front of me, but it's widely reported. Yet in today's paper, there was a story about, you know, the attacks are decreasing. What's actually happening is the number of individual incidents is decreasing, but the sophistication of them is increasing. And they're becoming more deadly, and they're killing larger groups. You know, they're killing three, four, five people at a time instead of just one. Where this story is going, this is a Knight Ritter story from Joseph Galloway. The U.S. military's only plant that manufactures small-arm ammunition is running at near capacity, and the military is being forced to go overseas to buy ammunition for troops in Afghanistan and Iraq and for those training to deploy there. The only military plant making small-arms ammunition is the Lake City Army Ammunition Plant in Independence, Missouri, and they're running 3 8-hour shifts a day, 6 days a week, producing 4 million rounds a day. In late December, the Army let two supplemental contracts to Olin Winchester and of East Alton, Illinois, which produces ammunition for recreational shooting, and the other two, Israeli Ministry Military Industries, for each to produce 70 million rifle rounds a month starting in June. So we're buying 70 million rifle rounds a month from Israel. We can't produce our own bullets, even. 1-800-TALK-YES. Chuck is on the line from West Virginia. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind, Chuck? We've got about a minute here.
Well, I'm a little worried there. You kind of went off on the snowmobiles and whatnot a little bit. I'm a huge liberal, big environmentalist and all that. But living here in West Virginia, and I've also lived in California and had to deal with the people, with groups trying to shut down national lands and whatnot for off-road use or any kind of use by ATVs or snowmobiles or any of that kind of thing. And I'm telling you, that's not something that us as Democrats want to take on. It's another thing that divides. It goes right along with God's guns and gays, and if you start
I understand, and if I was a political strategist, I'd agree with you. But I'm not a Democrat, and I'm not a political strategist. So, you know, I just think that it's that in some of these pristine areas like Grand Teton Park and Yellowstone, that we just have to respect that space. I mean, that's why they were set aside. Thanks for the call, though, Chuck. I appreciate your comments and your sentiments, and I think you're right. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talks, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
this is what they
contract?
Said.
Why isn't this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I hear the clock, it's 6 a.m. I feel so far from where I've been. I got my eggs, I got my pancakes too. I got my maple syrup, everything but you. I break the yolks and make a smiley face.
And welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. And as Guitar Zen says in a note to me, he says, who says the weather wasn't a cash cow? We have the polar vortex right now, and boy, is it cold. It is, let's see, it's 6 degrees below zero right now here in our Athenwood studios in central Vermont in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. And it was 35 below a couple of nights ago. It was about 20 below last night. And in the midst of this, now we're seeing oil prices just going through the roof. And people think, well, it must be the cold, right? I mean, here in the northeastern U.S., which is the single biggest regional consumer of oil on Earth, oil prices are starting to spike. I mean, it's just amazing what they're getting. Is this the evil Arabs? Is it because we didn't drill in Anwar? No, it's because, number one, Bush has allowed U.S. oil stocks to plunge to their lowest point since 1975, all at a time when OPEC oil is relatively plentiful. And two, because Bush policy madness has contributed to the steady descent of the dollar. I mean, this, I believe, is the main reason why OPEC is not opening the spigot, why oil prices are staying at 30 and above per barrel and will not go below it, because oil worldwide is denominated in dollars. And until they denominate it in a more stable currency like the euro, and the Bush administration keeps trying to drive dollars down as a very clumsy way of trying to influence trade policy, of making imports more expensive and exports less expensive, except from China, ironically. I mean, we're rewarding a dictatorship that has killed millions of its own citizens and punishing our allies in Europe and our, you know, countries that we have a long and historic relationship with. And the consequence of this is that the price of oil is going up because the value of the dollar is going down. People are just saying, hey, it doesn't make sense. Anyhow, thank you for joining us in these first 2 hours. If you're on a station getting the third hour, stay tuned. We're going to be on live with CBC. Stick around. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
We have
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Bush administration is taking a fresh look at its plans to turn over power in Iraq by June 30th. While that remains the deadline, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said Tuesday it's too early to tell whether it will have to be changed. The review underway is in response to objections to parts of the current plan by a leader of Iraq's majority Shiite Muslims. The decision to turn over control to Iraqis by June 30th remains a constant goal, administration officials said. It was not clear how the goal could be sustained, however, if a compromise cannot be reached with Shiite leaders. George W. Bush ordered the Pentagon to explore the possibility of a ground invasion of Iraq well before the United States was attacked on September 11, 2001, confirming the account former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill gives in his new book, according to ABC News. The official, who asked not to be identified, was present in the same National Security Council meetings as O'Neill immediately after Bush's inauguration in January and February of 2001. The president told his Pentagon officials to explore the military options, including use of ground forces, the official told ABC. That went beyond the Clinton administration's half-hearted attempts to overthrow Hussein without force. A top human rights group Tuesday accused the U.S. military of committing war crimes by demolishing homes of suspected insurgents and arresting the relatives of Iraqi fugitives. The military denied the charges by Human Rights Watch, saying it only destroyed homes that were being used to store weapons or as fighting positions, adding that all Iraqis detained were suspected of taking part in attacks on coalition forces. The New York-based human rights group said American soldiers demolished at least four Iraqi homes for no apparent military reason, other than to punish the families of anti-U.S. guerrilla suspects. More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
A researcher from the University of Wisconsin at Madison has figured out a better way to slice cheese. Just use a laser. Zhaochun Li, a mechanical engineering professor and laser expert, has adapted the same kind of laser used for eye surgery to slice Wisconsin's most famed food product. That laser, known as a cold laser, cuts by blasting apart the molecular bonds that hold materials together. At any other university, people would have just laughed. But this is Wisconsin, it's cheese, and it's no laughing matter, Lee said. Insert your own punchline here. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, Matthew.
Tell me what the future holds.
Ah, good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Not only is pollution nasty and deadly, but it's also a spoiled brat kind of substance that just won't stay put. You dump it over here and, whoops, it pops up over there or way out that way, or maybe even in that bag of organic baby lettuces you just bought. Indeed, organic baby lettuce is one of the surprising places that the Environmental Working Group recently found perchlorate. Having run scientific tests on 22 types of lettuce being sold in California supermarkets. Perchlorate is not something you want to find in your salad or on your BLT. It's a rocket fuel ingredient. It's known to cause brain damage and other health problems, especially in children, even when exposed only to trace amounts. The tests found way more than traces, however. One-fifth of the lettuces tested contained at least five times the amount of perchlorate that's considered safe. How did perchlorate end up in our lettuce? It came from a former rocket fuel factory located down at the tip of Nevada. The toxic chemical leached from the factory into the nearby Colorado River, which then carried it miles away through farmlands in Arizona and California, where 70% of our country's winter lettuce is grown. The farmers draw their irrigation water from the contaminated Colorado, and the lettuce sucks up both the water and perchlorate. Then the lettuce is harvested and shipped hundreds of miles to supermarkets where you buy it and take it into your home to serve to family, unaware that it comes pre-dressed with toxic rocket fuel. Pollution is like that. It just keeps going, ultimately into us. You'd think the powers that be would learn this lesson. Yet now these geniuses are saying it's perfectly safe to dump high-level nuclear waste in Nevada, claiming that it's too far away to hurt us. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about perchlorate and lettuce, call the working group, 202-667-6982.
There's another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome. Welcome, folks. We are linking up with Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and Donna McGillicutt. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. Donna, can you hear me?
Talk to Americans on the Tom Hartman Show. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Donna. How are you today?
I'm just great, thanks. And hello to all of our American listeners.
Yes, you are live coast to coast here in the United States. And tell our listeners real quickly about your program, Wild Rose Country.
Well, we broadcast here in Alberta, which is the province in this country that produces more beef than any other place in Canada. And I just want to give you a thumbnail sketch of what's happened since we had our first case of mad cow disease detected last year on May 20th. It rocked our industry and our economy as a whole, because as a country, too, Canada exports half of all its beef, and most of it goes to you folks in the United States. So the border to our beef has been closed since last year, and also to about 30 trading partners, including Japan, which is something that you also have faced since the BSC crisis hit your beef producers there. So what we're wondering is, here on this side of the border, is how big, Tom, has this mad cow disease story been in the United States? Because it's certainly been grabbing a lot of headlines in Canada.
Well, it's really interesting, Donna. Our media here, there's been a real shift in how media operates in the United States in my lifetime. I worked in radio news for 7 years back in the 1970s, and back then local stations actually hired news people to go out and dig up stories and things like that, and national networks had news divisions that were dedicated divisions that operated without consideration of advertisers and corporate interests and were dedicated to delivering the news. And now all of our networks, news divisions, are under their entertainment divisions. They're all ratings-driven. They're all sensitive to advertisers' concerns. And I don't want to say they've gotten lazy, but what's happened is that basically a story isn't a story if somebody isn't feeding the news machine. People aren't going out and digging up information. So what's happened is that the whole mad cow thing in the United States has faded to a large extent from the radar screen of the media, because the White House, this administration, is trying to button this thing down. In fact, they just put a proposal out. This was in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on January 11th, this last Sunday. Under a new proposal, the White House would decide what and when the public would be told about an outbreak of mad cow disease or an anthrax attack or nuclear power plant. They're trying to take the Office of Management and Budget, which is a part of the executive branch, part of the White House, and make them responsible, even though there are no scientists at the Office of Management and Budget, make them responsible for releasing information from the various science agencies. And nothing has been very little has been coming out, so very little has been covered on the one hand. And there's, almost a crackdown there. And then now they're trying to institutionalize it. On the other hand, I'm sorry, Donna, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tom. This is interesting.
On the other hand, we have had some interesting statistics. There was a study that was published. Here we are. One-fifth of U.S. adults say that fear of mad cow disease will affect what and where they eat. One in every five American adults say that they fear mad cow disease, and it will change their eating habits. According to Wall Street Journal online and Harris Interactive Healthcare poll, most said, 78%, said they would eat less beef. 16% indicated that they would become vegetarian. They would stop eating beef altogether. A sizable majority, 88%, have confidence that the government will take necessary steps. 45%, great deal of confidence. 43%, some confidence. But then on the other hand, you look at the sale of beef statistics. And wholesalers bought the third largest amount of beef in a one-week period since 1990 this last week. And they 21.7 million pounds of beef. Now, they're guessing that the reason for that is because the price has been dropping.
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly enough, on this side of the border, beef consumption has gone up as well. But when that first case of BSE was detected in Canada last year, there was a rallying around the industry because, of course, Canada is an agricultural economy. We also export so much of our beef, and beef producers were really worried about their futures. But that being said, this is a very complex issue. People are more concerned about food safety, and certainly these issues have now been highlighted, and people are asking more questions. And it'll be really interesting to hear how American listeners and Canadian listeners view this issue when they talk together today. I just want to remind people on this side of the border, the number to call is 1-866-456-1155, and we're ready to hear from Americans, Tom, if you've got somebody on the line.
Actually, I don't. Let me prep this. Our phone number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And if any of our listeners have questions about mad cow disease, about what's going on in Canada, you have opinions, comments, thoughts, attitudes, whatever you want to share with us, we'd like to know it. I'm particularly interested, Donna, in how Canadians are responding to the controversy about the science around the BSE and CJD and all the spectrum of encephalopathies. Are you having problems with your elk herds up there like we are with chronic wasting disease, for example? Is that a concern?
Well, I don't know how much of a concern it is among the population here. Because it's viewed to be a product that not a huge number of people consume at this stage. So it hasn't really garnered the headlines that, say, the beef industry has garnered since the cases have developed. But another interesting aspect that I hope we're going to pursue this hour is about integration in the two markets, because as the U.S. President George Bush has alluded to, and our Prime Minister Paul Martin has said, the beef industries are pretty much integrated in North America. And there has been talk, I know, south of the border about trying to undo that and trying to be a little bit more protective of your U.S. market and keeping Canada beef out. Now, whether or not that's even possible, I don't know, but I'd be interested to hear what people have to say. We've got some callers on the line, Tom, here in Canada, if you'd like to begin hearing from them.
Sure. Let's go for it.
Let's hear from Miriam. She's on the line from Gwynn, Alberta. Hello, Miriam. What are your thoughts on this issue?
We are actually beef producers, and I was just speaking to my son, who recently purchased a farm, and he pointed out to me that there's actually only been slightly over 150 deaths from Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease in the world. And he feels that the whole thing has been entirely blown out of proportion.
And excuse me, go ahead, Donna.
No, go ahead, Tom. I think you had a
there are some in this country, and there's this kind of bubbling underground, maybe hysteria, maybe actually good science. I mean, we've only known about these folded proteins, these prion diseases, malfolded since basically 96 to 98, for the last few years. And we're still trying to develop tests for them that are rapid and reasonable and reliable. And there are many who are suggesting, and there have been a few studies, one at one of the universities in Pennsylvania, that a lot of the dementia that's happening out there, the Alzheimer's disease diagnoses, are actually misdiagnosed Creutzfeldt-Jakob. And by the way, there was that 100, I think it was 143 cases in England that were, of those cases, two of those people were vegetarians, which has got a lot of people scratching their heads. So maybe it's a tempest in a teapot. Maybe it's an epidemic about to explode, like the AIDS epidemic did in the early 70s. It's a lot of people that just don't know.
Miriam, what do you think about the idea of separating the Canadian industry from the American one at this stage?
I think that would probably be foolhardy. It has worked up until now in cooperation, and I don't see why it can't be that way again. We can't cooperate and develop the science and resources together.
Thanks for your call, Miriam.
Thank you very much.
Donna, here in the United States, I think a lot of people think that our border is now closed, that, it was a Canadian cow, and we'll close the border and everything's under control. There's this sense that, the government is taking care of it. Isn't it something like 17 million cows go back and I remember that number stuck in my head, but I don't have it in front of me.
I'm not sure what the number is, but I do know that many, many millions of cattle do travel back and forth across the border. And our border is not shut entirely to U.S. beef, despite the fact that that case was found on December 23rd, even though it was traced back to an Alberta cow in Canada. But and interestingly enough, you shut your borders to Canadian beef on May 20th of last year after that first case. And in September, the border partially reopened, but only to steaks and muscle cuts of beef and that sort of thing. And everyone here was expecting that it wouldn't be long before the border reopened to live Canadian cattle and things would resume, not as they had before, but certainly in a much broader trade again, because people have lost, I think this economy has lost more than $2 billion, which is very significant for Canada, being a much smaller country and smaller economy than the U.S. But things are not going to get back to normal, it looks, at least for a very long time. Yeah. I want to give that number again in Alberta, 1-866-456-1155. And if you'd like to do the same, Tom, by all means, go ahead.
Sure, yeah. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Some just news stuff. We have a caller here. If we bring it on, this is Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is on the line. You're on with Tom Hartman. And Donna, how do you pronounce your last name?
McElligott. Yes.
McElligott.
Yeah.
Great. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I saw something about this mad cow situation where you don't have to worry about it if cows are raised organically and the feed that they're fed. Do you know any information about that? like organic beef?
Yeah, that's, you know, certainly organic beef to the organic standards is, you know, there's also people who label beef as natural beef, and that's not to any extent, but they are not eating animal byproducts as part of their feed. What's the situation with that in Canada, Donna?
As far as I know, not a single case of BSE has been detected anywhere in cattle that have not been fed animal protein. So organic, if organic means plant-fed animals, then that means that they, to this extent anyway, have been BSE-free everywhere.
Yeah. So that appears to be the case, Glenn. And it'll be interesting to see if the demand for organic beef, organic products, well, organic beef products in particular, go up. Is there any discussion, Don? I've only got about 30 seconds here before we've got to go to a break for 4 minutes. But is there much discussion in Canada about the relationship between cows and chickens and beef? I mean, we're still feeding cow byproducts to chickens and then chicken feathers to cows. Oh, there goes the music. I'll be back. Donna, and we'll pick up this conversation.
We'll look forward to continuing the discussion, Tom.
Yeah, and we got to do our commercial break here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Yes, she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy? Mm-hmm.
Banjila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart. Banjila. You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
You should have. I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we are joining Donna in with Wild Rose Country on CBC in Canada. Hey, Donna, you still there?
We sure are, and actually we've been talking to Russell, who's from Raymond, Alberta, and he had three questions for you, Tom, and your listeners. Okay. He was wondering whether or not American people were aware of the fact that the original cow that had BSE in this country last May came from a farm that was farmed by an American. And he was wondering...
In America?
No, in Canada. It was an American living in Canada who had this cow. He was also interested in hearing your thoughts on country of origin labeling and whether or not you think that that might, in fact, lead to a better and safer food system. And the other point that he was making was that despite the fact that the cow in question on December 23rd that was found in Washington State was traced back to Canada, it doesn't necessarily mean that the infection took place in Canada. It could easily have been from contaminated feed in the U.S. or for some other reason that is yet to be determined. So what are your thoughts on that, Tom Hartman, and maybe what your listeners have to say about that?
Well, yeah, and we've got two listeners on the line here, and I've got about 4 minutes before we have to take another break, and then we'll have a nice long 17-minute stretch to talk. I know you have the luxury of non-commercial radio there.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I agree. We have it here, too, with NPR, and it's great. In fact, we've got three calls now on this side. Number one, I'd never heard that it was an American who owned the cow. And with regard to country of origin labeling, a lot of consumer advocacy groups in the United States have been arguing for this for a long time, not just for beef, but for all food products, and many people, not just for food products, but for all products. That, you know, so that people can make informed decisions and vote with their dollars, as the old expression goes, although it's not democracy by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, my personal opinion is that there should be country of origin labeling. One of the problems, though, with American and Canadian beef is that, you know, a cow is born here, it goes there, it gets slaughtered there, it gets shipped back here. What's the country of origin? And, you know, I until somebody comes up with a way to answer that question, I don't think there's going to be a solution. Mm-hmm. Can we bring on Kurt from Sacramento, Donna?
Go right ahead. Hi, Kurt.
Okay. Hey, Kurt.
Morning.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. And with Donna McGillicutt in Wild Rose Country.
Hello?
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. Good morning. I was just wondering if anyone knows if this mad cow disease is acquired by a cumulative effect, or if it's just wet your tongue once and it's overdone with, an exaggerated sense. But
you mean can you get it from a single exposure, or do you have to be repeatedly exposed to it, or does a cow? Is that the question?
No, for the human, yes, what you said.
For a human,
such as mercury and lead, the accumulative AIDS, I think, is pretty much wet your tongue and it's over and done with. But
right, yeah. This is an infectious agent, Kurt, and you get it and you've got it. You know, whether the body has some resistance to it, my understanding anyway, Donna, correct me if I'm wrong, they just don't know. I mean, one of the things that they've been trying to figure out from the English CJD cases is that why is it that one person in the family gets it and four other people in the family don't? Is there a hereditary vulnerability to it? Because the people were all eating the same food. Nobody knows. There are so many questions around this that are unanswered. Do you know more about that, Donna?
Well, I usually refer those questions to the real experts, but I'm afraid I can't shed any more light on that, except to say that yesterday we had on an internationally renowned scientist on this who said that all it takes is a peppercorn-sized piece of infection or infected feed to give a cow, BSE. So we have to be rigorous with making sure that their diets are exactly what they should be and free of any contaminants. And that's just one way of responding to that question. But if I may, Kurt, can I ask you the question that Russell asked? How much do you know about the whole issue of the fact that it was an American
Donna,
that owned the original...
Excuse me, Donna, I've got to go to a break here in about 10 seconds. So,
okay.
Kurt, if you can hang on the line here. And then we got Jonathan from Palm Desert, California, Sean from Indianapolis, and
Dan
from
Santa Fe. How about if I let you go? I can't hear you. The volume's not loud enough. I can't hear you, so I'll let you go.
Oh, okay. All righty. Thanks, Kurt.
Okay,
Donna, we'll be back after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Wildfires in tropical forests can be dangerous to life on the bottom of the ocean. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In 1997, wildfires raged for months over much of Southeast Asia. Even after the fires went out, the destruction continued offshore. Coral reefs near Indonesia started to die off, and so did the organisms that live on them. Companies that rely on the reefs for tourism lost business, and people who depend on the reefs for food lost their source of fish. A group of scientists in Australia and Indonesia say the environmental losses at sea are directly connected to smoke from the fires. Nereli Abram is working on a PhD in earth sciences at the Australian National University in Canberra. She and her colleagues studied skeletal remains of the Indonesian coral to recreate what happened when the reefs died. Abram says the coral suffocated. She says smoke from the wildfires contained huge amounts of iron, and it fell out on the surface of the sea and settled onto the reefs. The iron fed blooms of algae, and when the algae died, the process of decomposition robbed the water of oxygen. Abram says coral reefs will be hard hit if tropical wildfires become more common.
There isn't really any reason why this thing wouldn't happen again, particularly because the predictions are that wildfires are going to continue to become larger and more common in the future.
Abram says global warming might contribute to more tropical wildfires and more problems for marine ecosystems.
Our study adds a new threat to coral reefs and shows that ecosystems are quite intricately linked, and what happens in one ecosystem can have an important impact on other ecosystems. So we need to be looking at more integrated management solutions.
The research by Abram and her colleagues was published last year in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And we're back. This is Tom Hartman.
Of illness, you know, from animal to animal or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the feed I buy from my goats. Mm-hmm. You know, we raise goats, as a little hobby. I mean, I don't check every bag to ensure, you know, I have trust in the quality control mm-hmm. issues of the company
but,
and the
but
fact
you know what
that
you're saying here, Rodney, is that there are so many variables and those variables could be what are putting us asunder. And appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
No problem.
1-866-456-1155. Hello, Tom Hartman, and hello to our American audience.
Now
we're back for a while, which is good. So I'd love to hear from some Americans and vice versa.
Okay, great. I've got some really scary news stories here, too, about, you know, the U.S. government that basically we just... the regulations released January 8th, quote, do not specify the procedures and techniques that the meat industry must use to ensure the special risk material, the brains and things, are. And basically, the USDA's new rules just say to industry, do whatever you think is best. We're not setting up, we're not defining these things, which is a lot of people are very concerned about.
I thought there was actually an outline there, Tom, from the USDA about what is allowed in and out, and that included things like... absolutely no intestines, for instance. Absolutely.
Yeah, there are recommendations, but there are no regulations at this point. In fact, this headline from today's American Progress Report, allowing corporations to make up their own rules. The regulations do not specify the procedures. A category that includes brain, skulls, eyes, and spinal cords and tonsils do not enter the foods, that they may. Instead, it allows the meat industry to make their own rules. The USDA provides no guidelines for the plan, and there is, quote, not even a deadline for preparing the plan, end quote. And then there's all these loopholes. Cattle younger than 30 months are not tested. Bone marrow is not tested. Delayed animal identification. And here's this PR ploy. The USDA announcement, United States Department of Agriculture, includes bans on air injection stunning and mechanically separated meat. They say this is what they told Americans. We're going to ban these things and everything will be fine. But these provisions will not enhance meat safety because neither technology is currently used in the United States. So anyhow, let's go to our callers. Jonathan in Palm Desert, California is on the line.
Hi there.
And Donna.
Hello.
Jonathan, you're on. You're on with Tom and Donna.
Yeah, I'm not too sure if I completely count as an American audience because I was actually born and raised in Alberta. I lived in Edmonton for most of my life. I recently moved down here to California, though. Just one quick question for your Canadian host. I was curious what steps Canada was taking towards mad cow disease. I had seen a report on last night on the CBC website that Japan may be willing to accept Canadian beef again, but that Canada still hadn't stipulated that they'd be testing every cow for spongiform encephalitis.
It's interesting that you raise that point because I'm not sure of the millions of animals that are slaughtered each year. I believe it's I think it's 5 million. Anyway, don't quote me on that one. But there is the Minister of Agriculture here has said that testing would go ahead in something like 30,000 animals. So some people who are advocating testing every animal that is used for food consumption, such as the Japanese do, think that that might go some ways to improving the system, while others say, well, why even bother? 30,000 is a drop in the bucket when you consider how many cows are actually consumed as beef in
right.
this country.
Well,
so
part of the issue,
it's just one measure, though.
Yeah, part of the issue is that, as Tom was saying, and I've heard on the show before, that there are still practices that can result in cross-species contamination, feeding cows to pork, or cows to pigs, and then pigs back to cows, et cetera, et cetera. So I was curious if steps like that had been eliminated up in Canada yet, and if there had been stricter controls compared down to here in the United States.
There's no question that everything is being looked at suddenly by our Canadian Food Inspection Agency. But I don't know what the final rules are. I don't think they have any final rules. There are recommendations, again, about what is acceptable in legal feed. But people say that things can easily go wrong. I mean, let's look at any farmyard. I mean, it is possible, perhaps, that a cow could get into animal feed for another species, and then who knows what could happen. So I think
here in the United States,
point,
I'm sorry. here in the United States, we're actually feeding pig parts and chicken parts to our cattle. We're continuing to do that. And we're feeding the cattle parts that may have BSE, the unusable, you know, brains and things, to the pigs and the chickens. And so there's this big question about whether we're going to have interspecies cycling, you know. I don't know if that's going on in Canada. I think that was Jonathan's point. And, Jonathan, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say we've got so many people who'd like to speak to our American neighbors. I'm wondering if we can talk to a few more of them on this side of the border. Tom, let's hear from Bruce in Edmonton. Hello, Bruce.
Yeah, hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks. What are your thoughts?
Well, we're looking at something to me that seems like a selective partnership. We have this North American Free Trade Agreement. We have all this sort of thing. But when it comes to, you know, something shaking loose like this, well, you know, it's your fault. No, it's your fault.
Right.
You know, we have a level of integration, let's face it, that has been there for probably 30 to 40 years. The cow's out of the barn. You know, if it did come from Canada or if it came from an imported beef from another country that was brought into the States and then exported to Canada, or if it came from some feed that, you know, somehow got contaminated from somewhere, States, Canada, Britain, wherever. It happened a long time ago. The stuff is in the system. You know, there are things that we can do, okay? But, you know, when we look at this isolationism, which I feel is a tendency of this current American administration, to say, well, it's not our fault, or, you know, it's them, not us, well, then the partnership starts to break down. Then the questions start to be, you know, the finger-pointing starts. And you know, it seems a little bit ridiculous when the science can easily say, you know what, the cow's out of the barn.
Tom.
Well, yeah, the problem that I think we have here in the United States, again, this from the Center for American Progress today, one of a news source here in the United States, one potential explanation for the lax regulations and the refusal to increase funding for inspections. See, we have 35 million cows a year, and we inspect 20,000. We have 200,000 downer cows a year, and we inspect only 20,000 of them, is the swath of money the Bush administration receives from agribusiness. In the 2000 election cycle, Bush received more than $2.6 million from the agribusiness industry, and he's already received $1.7 million for 2004. Those totals include more than $110,000 from the meat processing industry alone. And I think that until both countries get their act together with regard to standards and practices, we're going to have this problem.
But the standards exist, you know, like the standards have existed for long enough that...
Not here.
Well, I'm saying that, you know, those standards have been mutual for a long time. So we both have got to get those standards together. I guess, you know, one of the points I heard raised by the Forestbergs, the couple that raised that cow that was in Washington, was really interesting. They said, you know, like maybe, I believe it was them, they said maybe market forces have got to determine this. I mean, and I ask you and Donna this both. I mean, if you could buy a BSE-tested piece of beef or not, if you had the choice on the shelf, which would you buy? You know, I mean, the question's pretty obvious. I mean, the other questions are stuff like, well, if elk and buffalo and deer are getting this stuff, they're not given that feed. They have.
Yeah, but you know what would happen? Pardon me.
You know, if where are those animals getting that stuff? You know, the animals that are wildlife, the stuff that the you know, we see it all over the place. Farmers are asking, well, I don't want my cows near that potentially infected deer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it seems to me that the deer are not the ones who've been fed the rudiment. Mm-hmm.
But I think I know where you were going to go with this, Tom, and my response would be, but then what would happen is the wealthier folks in both sides of the border would be eating the tested animals, while those who couldn't afford it would be the ones perhaps more subject to problems or disease.
Well, that's one. And the other issue is that here in Vermont's a big dairy state. And a few years ago, Ben and Jerry's ice cream started putting no artificial growth hormones contained in our milk because they were only buying milk from organic farmers. And a member of the lawyer for the lobbying firm for one of the largest chemical companies in the world quit his job, went to work for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, changed the rules to make it illegal to put no RGBH in the product. And it's against the law, actually, in the United States to label something saying that it doesn't contain something that might endanger you.
So, you know, I mean, Donna, what you're saying is that the wealthy would start buying it until the poor started getting ticked off enough, you know, and said, hey, guys, you know, let's change the rules.
You know, I think, Bruce, one other thing I would say to that point is, and I think we should probably move on to another caller, is just that, here I am taking the last word, but maybe we should pay for our food what it is truly worth. Maybe our practices are dedicated to producing cheap and easy food, and maybe we should be taking a second look at that.
That's or buy from farmers that we know and how they fed them and how they raised them.
Thanks for the call, Bruce.
Thanks.
And Tom, do you have a caller there who'd like to speak to some Canadians?
I do. Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana has a question. Sean, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom.
Hi,
it's a breath of fresh air getting you in Indianapolis. I got to go through the Internet to do it, but it's worth it.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to tell you and all the listeners that there's a great website out there called NoDowners.org. It's a very informative site about downer cows and all that.
Right.
It's a great site. I've got two questions really quick. What about, I know that there's a ban on downer cows for human consumption. But what about everything that's going in our pet food? And the second question is, what about a friend of mine buys that stuff called Laura's beef, and it's supposed to be certifiably organic. What exactly is that, and how legitimate is it?
Well, if in the United States, if it's certified organic, it hasn't been fed animal products. I'm sorry, your first question again was, what was it, Donna?
It was about pet food.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. My screen changed and I went off into space there. I was speaking with a person this morning here in Vermont who's quite knowledgeable about this, and she said she was pretty sure that the downer cattle were ending up in pet food. Certainly, you know, the products, the byproducts that humans don't use end up in pet food, and that may be a concern, but I don't know. Do you know in Canada?
I am not sure about that, but I know that there were restrictions on the American products that were coming in as pet food that contained beef. So
yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. I think we are currently in the process of banning pet food that has beef products in it.
Interesting.
I think that's in the works at the moment.
Okay.
Thank
we
you
have
for that call.
Thank you, Sean. We have Dan in Santa Fe, but if you want to take your caller from Canada first.
Sure, okay.
We'll alternate here.
Okay, Kim, here's your chance to talk to Americans from Lethbridge. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the program, Kim. Hello, Kim. Okay, well, let's hear from Lisa, who's on the line in Edmonton. Hello, Lisa. What are your thoughts about this, and what would you like to say to Americans?
Well, a couple of things, actually. And first of all, I am a livestock producer, but I have always had a lot of thoughts about these new emergences of different viruses. Right down, what started me off was when HIV first broke out in the 70s, and I had the feeling that this is not a natural phenomenon or norm mutation. Now we've got SARS and Hanta, the Hanta virus, the mouse, you know?
Yeah, Hanta virus.
West Nile, we've got the BSE, and they all seem, and they're all... And there's so many, my point is that there's so many experiments going on around the world in these huge labs and even small labs where we're playing around with these viruses and we're breaking down their natural host recognition in their DNAs. You know, like the HIV virus was, by the way, I'd like to mention that it had been underreported those first decades. Very
yes.
much underreported first in the States and then all over the world, because I think that the powers that be felt that they could contain it and then find a cure. But we're seeing more and more pandemics, and we're seeing new diseases, and we have epidemiologists that try to trace them back to source, but they stop and say, why did this particular virus, that they like in the case of BSE to call a prion, mm-hmm. why did it mutate? What caused that, and why don't we look further and say, why are all these labs doing these experiments? We're talking about the genetic engineering.
Lisa, can I ask you, as a livestock producer, are you comfortable with the surveillance systems that exist at the moment?
No, I'm not. I mean, I'm pleased that Canada is doing the tracing system. But number two, like the caller just a few times, calls before raises goats, as a hobby. I raise goats very seriously. I did embryos to bring a new breed to the continent here, and that's the Boer goat. And ever since, I have been very concerned about the inbreeding that goes on. My animals were 100% non-inbred, and I advertised them as such. But the feed that I fed my animals right from way back when, I fed oats and barley mix only, and only feeds off of my farm. And I'm not a registered organic grower. I'm not registered. But the only thing I ever fed my animals that was unnatural, and I did not like extruded feeds because I felt, number one, you don't know what's in it, and number two, they put the bottom of the barrel, cook it all together, and you're not really getting the best bang for your buck. Anyway.
Lisa, you've raised a number of excellent points, and thanks so much for sharing them with us. Tom, let's hear from some American callers.
Yeah, I have to go to a break in about 55 seconds here, so we can.
What are your initial thoughts about what Lisa had to say then?
Well, I wonder if these things. I thought she raised a really good point. I wonder if what we're seeing is the initial stages of a sickness of the planet. That, you know, for example, AIDS patients generally don't die of AIDS; they die of opportunistic infections, and. We're killing, all these species. We're throwing all these pollutants into the atmosphere. We're warming up the atmosphere. I mean, there's all these really rather drastic environmental changes that are happening, broadly negative ones all around the world. And you just wonder, is the planet starting to show the symptoms, the early symptoms of this sickness? There's my music, Donna. I've got to go. I'll be back in 5 minutes. And okay, thanks. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Dan in Santa Fe, stick on the line here. We'll try and get your call in the last 3 minutes here after we come back. Stay tuned.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
Democrats. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Show. An email here from Jamie. Jamie has a great idea. He was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Our friend down in South Carolina, who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech. Jamie says, I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature. One word above the other. And then have a strip of paper that is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, and after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up.
We love Bush. We love Bush. We love Bush.
Impeach Bush.
Huh? You didn't know I'm going to say that, did you?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heaping helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When you were young and your heart was...
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman, and we're talking with Donna McGillicutt.
Hello there, Tom.
Hey, Donna.
Do you have time to take one more American call before you...
We do.
...wrap up your thoughts there? Excellent.
I have 3 minutes here. We'll take in Dan in Santa Fe. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I was wondering if either of you had checked into the theories and research of Mark Purdy on mad cow disease.
This is the fellow that believes that copper in the soil
absolutely
may be a source. I have read a little bit about it, but I think his theories are very controversial, and I don't know how accepted they are in the scientific community yet, but he's certainly somebody who's promoting an alternative view.
Well, let me make the point here is that I've checked into him pretty thoroughly, and I'm obviously, the reason why I'm making this call is I'm very convinced that he's correct, because I think his theory answers a lot more questions than the conventional wisdom does. But just from your point of view, and I believe you're representing Canada, at least in some way.
Which is one small segment. I'm a host of a radio show.
Okay, or at least...
I don't speak
at least,
for Canadians.
Okay, all right. But in they're losing the beef industries in Canada, and potentially also in the United States, are going to be losing billions of dollars because of one cow on either side of the border. And if you read and pursue the idea, the research of Mark Purdy, you'd be convinced that they're going about it all wrong and they're wasting billions of dollars needlessly. And I would think that on the... Let's say it's a controversial theory, and it's either right or it's wrong. Okay,
it's worth checking out.
50-50 chance that it's right for the chance to get back a couple billion dollars. Somebody should check into it.
Yeah. Well, the fact that Donna knows about it, Dan, is a good sign, I would say. I didn't know about this. I hadn't heard about it, and I think I've done some pretty good research on this. So thanks for bringing that up and sharing it with us. Donna, we've only got about 10 seconds left here, so I just want to say thanks to your listeners for joining us, and thanks to you for making this program
happen. Well, thank you so much, Tom. It's been wonderful, and we've loved the opportunity to share some Canadian thoughts with our American neighbors. I hope we can do it again, Tom.
Thanks. We've had a lot of fun, too. And the best to the folks in Canada.
Thank you, and
thank you. This is our program produced today by Louise Hartman here in Vermont. Music from Brad Walrod in New York City. Thanks to our folks in the chat room for showing up and contributing what you have. And fascinating conversations. Thanks to Donna there in Canada. Thanks to you for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
Come from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies, Raven Simone.